You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. Welcome to The Real Short Box. My name is Supreme Chancellor Kevin.
I'm Darren the Educator.
And
I'm Donald.
Yes, indeed, he is Donald. Simply a Donald.
That's it. Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, man, it's very exciting. We are about to have a live caller here on this special Real Short Box, my friends.
Yes, we are. I believe this might be the second time we're going to be talking to an independent comic book creator. Am I correct, gentlemen?
Well, Stacy Pincinault, of course, kind of, you know, started us a few weeks back. And right now, who are we going to have today, Kevin?
We're going to speak to Alan Ling. He is the writer and one of the co-creators of Genesis 2 comics.
Genesis 2?
Yes.
Nice.
Now, first you might think of, like, you
what
know...
What happened to Genesis 1?
I knew you were going to say the second Genesis, which, interestingly enough, this year is the 30th anniversary of that console.
Is it really?
Yep. I actually saw a little YouTube ad. They were like, remember back in the day, Genesis does... They actually
can't get this on Nintendo.
Well, they didn't do that part. They just simply said, Genesis does, and they started like 30 years or something like that. So they actually have a Genesis Mini coming out.
You know, and like I said, we read through these books. I suspect it has something to do, a slight parallel biblical with the book of Genesis.
Yes.
However, we're not going to jump to that conclusion. We're going to ask the man himself.
Let him speak for himself.
This is how we roll on The Real Short Box, folks. We love long-form interviews.
Right.
We are here to let them speak. We are not here to promote ourselves.
Nope.
We would like the comic artist to tell you exactly what goes through their mind.
Tell them
this
the process.
This is how we do it.
Yes, he's
got it. It's Tuesday night, and the mood is right.
Yes, I hate to be that person that's a little, you know, kind of brash and overconfident about that, but that's just what we do here. I think it's a format that's very beneficial to all of the listeners out there. We want podcast land to know who you are before we really start digging into your book.
Right. That's always important.
Oh, I think he's calling.
All right.
Alan, how are you, sir?
Very good, sir. Who am I talking to?
Oh, let me just adjust your volume here a little bit. My name is Darren.
Hey, Darren.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm real good. I'm actually vacationing, but I'm relaxed.
where are you vacationing at, sir?
I'm actually in Kauai, the island of on one of the islands in Hawaii.
Oh, Kauai. Okay.
All right. So if the government's looking for you, they now can find you a little easier.
Yeah, exactly. There's no escape from this island.
So, what I like to do here is, first off, I've read your bio. There's a couple things that I find really intriguing here, and I just want to kind of introduce people to you. So, it says you're originally from the Bay Area. Which part, sir?
I'm from Oakland, California, and I went to UC Berkeley, so I'm an East Bay kind of guy, so I'm across the bay from San Francisco.
Oh, so you're a Golden Bear.
Oh, you got it. Yes, sir.
Oh, dude, you know, I love Rasputin Records. Do you ever go in there?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh, my gosh. It's great.
It really is.
I don't know if
it exists. So it says here that your parents are originally from China. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm mostly Chinese. Matter of fact, I did a 23andMe, and it says I'm mostly Chinese.
That's fascinating. You could just spit in a cup, and all of a sudden, now you know everything about you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting. So, you studied music composition. It says your parents were relatively conservative. What did they do for a living?
My dad was a chemical engineer, and my mom was a flavor chemist.
Say that again, please. What was your mother?
A flavor chemist. So she did chemistry on products that actually, like, artificial ingredients for the USDA.
Oh, interesting. It's really cool.
So remember that, I don't know how old you are, but do you remember that weird fake peanut butter they put out decades ago? Probably when you were, this was back in the 70s. The fake peanut butter.
Oh, I'm not aware of that.
She was kind of responsible for that.
Interesting.
Fake peanut butter. Wow. Okay.
So I can actually see some of the influence you had for some of the characters you had, you know, because, you know, mixing chemicals together, bioengineering, you know, genetic manipulation.
Yeah, my degree is in microbiology and immunology from UC Berkeley.
Okay,
and
that makes sense.
I went to a master's degree in physical therapy.
Okay.
I did some lab work too.
So
So let me ask you something. Did you happen to splice a dog with an armadillo at some point?
I think I did some gene splicing, but it's with other kinds of bacteria. I didn't know.
Oh, okay. All right, just checking.
Yeah, because I was curious, you know, if you did any of this stuff in real life.
So,
I'm sorry?
Oh, sorry. I just want to continue. So you did cover your physical therapist. It says you're a real estate developer. At age 44, you were diagnosed with cancer.
That wasn't so good. I mean, I almost died of cancer back in probably about 14 years ago, back in 2005.
Ooh.
So they said what I had was terminal back then.
Oh wow!
But so much for terminal, I'm still alive. So
oh, thank God for that.
It wasn't a false diagnosis either, which is I happen to be very one of the lucky people that the tumor was encapsulated, so it just spread throughout my whole body.
Okay.
So here I am.
Now it's
very blessed, sir. Congratulations on that. I've been dealing
thank
with
you, thank you.
My mom has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So, speaking from someone that's had some personal experience in that, you know, it's always really good to hear a success survivor kind of story. So, definitely congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
I
appreciate it.
So in 2014, sir, it says you decided to get back into comics and write. I have to ask, was Genesis 2 the first comic you wrote?
Yes. Yeah,
the
first. I just decided to go long and just come up with a giant hardcover, four chapter comic book, 130.
Went
for it.
Yeah, so the... when you came out with the comic, was there individual issues or was it just the hardback, like the graphic novel was kind of the first volume?
It was a graphic novel.
Okay.
It was a graphic novel. We went through the whole thing.
And that's what we kind of went through as far as like the book itself. We have a copy of that. Is that correct? That's what you gave to Kevin and we've looked through itself. The graphic novel. It's like the oversized book.
Yeah.
Oversized,
just went all out.
Yeah, that's actually...
I was large.
That's what really impressed me about that is the overall size of the book and the presentation itself. It looked really good. It was I was really impressed with the style, the size, the quality of it in general. Going big like that, I thought that was a very good, very cool idea. And was that something, were you planning on doing like a regular size graphic novel and then you went larger? Or was the like going big format kind of what you wanted to do from the start?
I wanted to go large from the start. I didn't want to have to compromise. You know, doing the floppies and slowly getting then coming up with a big anthology. I said, let's just go large first, and then maybe after that, reverse engineer and then do the floppies. As you guys know, Diamond is the only distributor of comic books in Canada and this country, and they want floppies. So before I went and distributed, now I'm negotiating an agreement with Diamond right now for distribution of the floppies. I went ahead and did the hardcovers first because I was self-published. So I said, you know, I'll just go do the whole thing, reverse engineer everything later on. I wanted to go large first.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of them, you know, we gave a lot of them away as, you know, as public relations gifts. As you know, I'm a physical therapist, but I own my own physical therapy company as well. So I handed them out to all our referral the doctors. And they went nuts. They just, you do what? I thought you just do physical therapy. And I said, no, I also do this. I really, as a matter of fact, I wanted to always do this. I just never had, you know, the initiative to actually just do it. And finally, when I did, I just said, you know what, life is short. Go, you know, just go with it, because we're not going to get another chance.
Right.
Unless you believe in reincarnation.
Speaking about, the whole idea of what you did and stuff. How did this idea start, so to speak? How did you get started? I know you've been wanting to do it, but what was the catalyst that said, hey, you know what? I need to get this trade, this 4-issue compilation done. I have this idea. When did this come about?
Well, it actually came about after my father died. My father passed away about 5 years ago, and I just realized, I did have cancer, and I still was doing the same old stuff. I really didn't get off my ass and do anything that I really wanted to do. Then my dad died, and I said, you know what? You better get off your butt and do something, because what's going to happen is, how many more, wake-up calls do you need to actually go back and do what you really love to do? How many more shocks do you need to get? So I finally went ahead, and I actually cut that. I retired from my work, physical therapy, which I own. I said, I'm just going to focus on doing the graphic novel. So I really focused on that for about a year, just trying to get it going. And, the process took 3.5 years. It was a long time from the beginning to the first time it got printed. So anybody who goes into this thing, you better be prepared that it's going to take longer than you think it's going to take, and it's not going to cost more than you think it's going to cost also.
Okay, it's Darren here again. So I want to kind of get into Genesis 2 just a little bit. I noticed one of the major concepts and themes here in Genesis 2 revolves around transformation. I kind of immediately began to think of the Wachowskis, Cloud Atlas, Matrix, Sense8, things of that nature.
Cyberpunk.
And why is this theme of such interest to you, and why was this a theme that you really wanted to explore in your story?
I had to change a whole bunch of things. When I wrote the graphic novel, I went through a divorce. I had to cut my hours at work. I had to reconsider why am I here on the planet? What am I here to really do? And people would say that, okay, Alan, you're doing very relevant work. You're healing people. You're getting them, people can't walk, to walk again. You're getting rid of people's pain. What more relevancy can you ask for? But there's something about telling a story and having people transform themselves just by reading my story. Not a whole lot, but just by reading my story, getting a little bit of something from it. Saying, I'm going to change something that I'm going to do today, just to make my life and everybody else's life a little bit better. And whether it's, espousing on what friends do for each other, what friendship is, or global warming, or terrorism, about all these things, what are you going to do to make your life a little bit better? And just trying to reach people and, give them a little gentle tap on the shoulder and saying, hey, what are you going to do today? What are you going to do to change yourself, to make yourself a better person?
Right. That's very interesting.
That's good. Let me ask you something here real quick. As a creator, what was what was the most difficult part that lied before you to get this seed, this idea off the ground? Was it, getting an artist to work with you? Was it getting, just somebody to believe in you? Was it, bouncing ideas off friends? What was one of the most difficult parts that lied before you as a creator?
Finding the right artist to work with him. And I did some of the storyboarding, and just finding another artist who also, I could talk about things, mm-hmm. and be able to come up with a story. That was Christian Bowe. Christian was a great guy. When I met him, I was, he was 28 or 29, and I was 54. And, he had lost his father much earlier than I did. His dad died about the same time my dad died. So his dad died in his early 20s. And here I was in my early 50s, and my father passed away. Mm-hmm. And so Christian and I had enough in common that, we were able to kind of work really well together, to try try to get the comic book started. And, you know, it took 6 months of pre-production and just bouncing ideas off each other before we actually had something that we thought was storyboard. And the secret behind the story writing, and that's why the comic book is a little bit unpredictable, is that we wrote 5 pages at a time. We did not write the book from, we didn't have a synopsis or a treatment in front from beginning to end. I kept it to 5 pages at a time because I did not want to know what the story was going to eventually happen, what's going to happen at the end. I wanted it to be some kind of satisfactory ending, but I didn't want Christian to know, and I didn't want myself to know, that then I'd be bored. We'd just be writing something we knew was going to finish, or, and I wanted to keep it exciting throughout the entire creative process. So 5 pages at a time.
Gotcha. 5 pages at a time. That's an interesting process. Normally, the people will, what someone does is they'll plot out, but it seems like it was more of a journey for you than it was an actual, I guess, story, so to speak. The story came from the journey, if that makes sense.
And I would totally agree with that. I know people always say it's not the destination, it's the journey, and it sounds corny, but, you know, the whole thing is, if you make your life a journey, then you won't be as distraught over all the things that happen, because you're always going to be, it's always an adventure.
Right.
Life should be considered an adventure. Every day is something new. You get a chance to try to figure out what you want to do and
absolutely
how you want to dress. Or,
right.
It should be an adventure every single day. It should not be predictable.
We only have so much time on this planet, you know, so I agree with that. So was this project, since you and the artist shared this commonality, was it almost therapeutic in nature, to where that you guys were working in tandem in that kind of style, or was it more of trailblazing kind of adventuresome, or was it kind of a hybrid, a combination of both?
I think it's a combination. I think you hit it on the head that we were doing a little bit of our own trailblazing. I mean, I know, I'm sure there's other writers and books who basically would do the same. So basically, would do, a few pages at a time when they write and they have a general outline. But for me, it was an adventure into story writing. And the fact that I've only written short stories, or very short stories.
And Alan, just
a probably better for me to write if you think so.
Just a quick question, then I'm going to toss it to Kevin. Do you ever get, like, since this is such personal material to you, do you ever get emotional while you're writing this?
I think the only time I got probably a little emotional about stuff was at the very, very end. At the very end of the story, because I knew that it was coming to an end. That this part of my, like I said, the journey was finishing for this book, and I didn't want it to end, so that's why we left it a little bit open ended on chapter 4 about whether things have finished or not finished yet.
Right.
And that's the only time, and that's where the friends looked like it was a little shaky when they were at the very end of the story. And you know, chapter 5 and chapter 6 definitely kind of bind everything together. We've already written that, but we're starting on chapter 7 now. And you'll find that there's a lot more. It's interesting you mentioned the Wachowski brothers, because there's a little bit of that going on where somebody else had said once that didn't we kind of alluded to in the hardback, but we never quite said what the song was.
Gotcha.
Hey, I want to ask you a quick social question about some of your social influences. I noticed you had like Go Glass, which is like for Google Glass, Bar Bar Jinx for like Jar Jar Binks. And also you have a thing for Elon Musk. You know, his grandson has a great influence in the story as far as technology. So tell me about like the social influences that helped you with your writing.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last sentence.
Oh, I just ask you about the social influences, you know, that you use to help you create the story. Like, you know, like Elon Musk's grandson is like a big, you know, part of the story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I listened to Sarah Fell, and George Lucas was always around.
It's in that area.
I went out for breakfast. I'd actually talked to George at a visual effects anxiety meeting at one point. I used to be a physical therapist at Pixar, so I got all sorts of, you know, I ran into all sorts of people in my career, even as a physical therapist. And so, and George was a really interesting guy, and, you know, his favorite character, he was like Barnhart and Jar Jar Binks. And Jar Jar Binks was kind of this laid-back dude, right? Nothing seemed to bother him, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But George, if anybody met George, at least before he got married again, he was a very serious dude. He was serious all the time. And it was interesting. I picked on the our own version of Jar Jar Binks only because we didn't. I thought he was my least favorite character, and so therefore we did bad things to our version of him.
You know, Alan, it's interesting. So I actually did stunt work on Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and I did get to meet George, and the only thing I remember about him, honestly, is walking onto the set with a fudgesicle and saying, "Hey guys, they got ice cream over here now." You know, and I guess he was relatively stern about it now that I think about it.
Yeah, I saw him walking, this is a few years ago, with his new, he had another kid with his new wife,
right.
And he was so happy. I'd never seen him smiling the whole time, and I was really happy. So this is after he sold, during the time where I actually sold Lucas's film.
Okay, that's probably why he was so happy.
We actually just recorded.
Well, yeah, you'd be happy too if you had $4 billion.
Oh, of course,
right?
Well, of course.
We actually had recorded recorded a podcast too. I can speak personally. I'm a big fan of George Lucas. I think he gets heavily hammered for a person who has as much influence as he does in this industry. But let me toss it to Kevin to get more into your books here.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about issues 5 and 6, and then I think you mentioned briefly about 7. So is this issue 7 going to be more about the origin of these characters?
Yeah, we did what George did was he went and did prequels, right?
Right.
We kind of did some prequels. We just followed through with some of what George and Lucas had done with his Star Wars series, and we went backwards and we said, okay, we're going to show the origins of Lisa and Daniel. Chapter 5 centered mainly around Lisa.
Issue 5 was quite a twist.
Six. I'm sorry?
Issue 5 was quite a twist with the origin of Lisa.
Yes. And that's when we mentioned the Wachowski brothers, and they had transformed themselves. Well, we did a little bit of that too. So I guess I'll have to send you Chapter 6 or something, but yeah, we had to do a little bit of that as well.
Hey, guys. Just a quick interruption here. I just want to mention We Can Be Heroes, the best comic shop in the valley, possibly the world. We Can Be Heroes is in Chatsworth, California. Come on down for 20% off on a pull list, vintage toys, new toys, collectibles, vintage comics, gaming, and more. Guys, they really got it going over there. It's a great spot just to hang out. It's like the Cheers of comic shops. We Can Be Heroes, Chatsworth, California. So Alan, real quick, I realized that we've been negligent. We're so excited about the story and the concept and everything. If you're like all these people out here listening right now, what's the pitch you have for them? What's the idea, the nugget of the story that will get them interested, that wants to make them search you out and pick your book up? What do you have? Can you explain it concisely and quickly as far as like what it is this is all about, in other words?
Yeah, give us the hook.
If I was to pick up one general theme that I have in my whole life about, I think they have, maybe in this country, which is a great country, we have an incredible tolerance for evil. And I don't think we should do that. And that may sound tyrannical or inconsiderate or not PC, but you know, we tolerate evil a lot. We think it's okay for people. It's too forgiving when people do something really bad. And it's like, okay, well, that's okay to do that. And it really isn't okay to be mean and nasty to people and etc. other level where all of a sudden you're killing people.
Right.
So, you know, the way, you know, you negotiate with terrorists, right? And other countries don't negotiate with terrorists.
Right.
You know, we don't negotiate with the kidnappers. No, you don't. You know, other countries don't negotiate. They just go and kill. And, yeah, there's collateral damage, but you send out a message that we're not going to negotiate. There's no, you're not going to give you any attention. We're going to come in, we're just going to get rid of you because you're no good. And I think because our country is so great, we send out also a good message to people that, you know, we're forgiving and we're kind, but yet be forgiving and kind to your friend. They make a, you know, faux pas, but some of these other folks, you do not want to be forgiving and kind to them. They need to be gone. And that's the thing about, you know, no matter how persuasive, like the evil guy, no matter how charming and smart and everything he is, he wants to kill everybody. How forgiving do you want to be of that person?
Right.
We keep cannibal murderers alive in jail.
That's true.
Why do we do that? We already know. Why do we do that? So, I mean, it's clear that they're genuinely guilty, and yet we keep these people alive.
So, if I can kind of briefly, you know, maybe sum up what you're saying. So you're kind of saying that the goalposts culturally and society-wise can shift, and people are justifying bad behavior, and that's just something that really bothers you.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not faulting the millennials. They're a whole different breed. I love them all. My kids are millennials. So there's this thing where, you know, there's a certain point where you can only tolerate so much in a society before the society starts to go downhill.
That's true.
I'm very, very concerned about tolerating certain kinds of behaviors that is not good for society.
Okay, I mean that
tolerance doesn't mean that you're.
I think you were just going to say tolerance doesn't mean, you know, stupidity, but I think it's a very clear message. I think we succinctly got what you're trying to get across.
Okay.
So back to your stories here.
Oh, and explain to me about the villain. If I'm going to pronounce his name like Vogt, I'm not going to say if it's right, V-O-G-T. Is he like, it's like a combination of like different bad guys that you put together, you know, throughout, you know, history.
Yeah, with him, he's a combination of some of our modern day politicians combined with some of the really horrible tyrants who are genocidal from human history.
Right.
Yeah, I noticed you had
Hitler or some of these other Chinese emperor that wiped out millions of people.
So
we combined a whole bunch of these people together into one villain.
Sorry to cut you off here, but I noticed that was a really awesome page in that book when you had Hitler, Stalin, Mao, all those folks. I just, that was one of my favorite pages in the book. Like, I mean, it's just, I like artistically how you had those people surrounding him in the background. It was very clear. It was not subtle. And I'm not a big fan of subtlety, so I like that.
Plus,
I like getting hit over the head.
plus, he killed, what, 2 billion
thank
people?
You, thank you. That was, that was a great story for him. I came up with that. And I said, we don't want to have any misconceptions that Boyd is a nice person.
Right.
You succeeded.
He's straight to the point.
You know, they have troubled childhoods. Some people are just rotten. They're just rotten to the core. That's just it.
Yeah, the fact that he killed off his family is even more disturbing.
Yeah. Now, we shouldn't try to make really evil people look like a sympathetic figure. Right. I don't get that. Some people are born evil.
Yeah.
We need to recognize that. And some people who are born evil, and they're really, really, really smart, and they have a lot of money to back it up, they'll destroy everything. So there's nothing to, because you know, you can have thousands and thousands of law-abiding, kind people, and all it takes is one guy with an automatic weapon blow as much lives and families apart. One guy.
Well, Alan,
no, I'm not into gun control, don't get me wrong.
Right.
I'm saying that it doesn't take a lot to destroy many, many good people's lives. So that's why it's eliminate as much evil on the planet as possible. I'm not saying it from a religious, you know, maniacal standpoint. I'm just saying that it's a factoid that we need to start addressing that in our society so that even disciplining our children.
Yeah. What you need is just a whole bunch of genetic animals that are spliced together that can be at your command. I feel like that's
the world needs an Igor and a Cap and a Ardo.
But with that, we're gonna have to wrap this up. We do thank you for so much. You know, we know we want you to enjoy your vacation.
Yeah.
We're here in LA and you're in Hawaii, but whatever. You know, you enjoy yourself. And thank you so much for giving us a call. We really appreciate it very much. We appreciate your time and your input on this. And
yeah, bless you and continue to stay healthy, sir.
Absolutely. And anybody that's interested, the name of the book is Genesis 2.
Genesis 2.
By Alan Ling. Yeah. And
the website is genesis2comics.com.
Yes. And thank you again. Thank you so much for reaching
out. Thank you.
Hey, Donald, Kevin, Darren, thank you for having me on the show, and I am very appreciative, and hopefully I will run into you guys again next year.
Oh, I'm sure
absolutely. We'll be around. You take care of yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, sirs. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
So we want to talk a little bit about what that was all about now. We want to, give you a little more in-depth of the story. And for that, I'm gonna turn this over a little bit more into Kevin and Darren's domain because they got a little bit more into it than I did. Sadly, I had to do other things. I had to work. I had to dig a couple graves.
You had to edit.
I had to edit.
You still haven't eaten your tacos.
I haven't eaten my tacos, so I'm gonna eat my tacos and you guys talk.
Well, here's the thing, Kevin. Do you feel as though I've really tried to let him speak as much as possible because I don't think it's fair for us to put the words in his mouth.
Right. Let him explain.
Yeah. So, but I mean, are there some major things that you feel like maybe he didn't cover or things that maybe he glazed over or that we need to elaborate upon?
Well, one thing he glazed over was how the state of this world he created is in. I mean, basically more than half the world is under the domination of this Voight character. You know, you're using these different ninja terrorists and other corporate terrorists, essentially, that have taken over the world, half the world.
But you know, it's interesting. Before we get into Voight, but the thing is in that book, it's like he split it in two, because that's like the second part of the story. And it didn't quite hit me over the head, but do those stories merge together, or are they just kind of like separate in many respects? So, like, because there's like a part one and part two in the same book.
Right, right. I think at a certain point it does kind of merge together. Like you see, I was a little confused at first myself because you had the character of Lisa, who was like the scientist who's trying to protect Elon Musk's company's, you know, secret, kind of like the MacGuffin of the whole story, the Therm ID.
Right.
And that's what Voight wanted. He wanted to get access to it so that way there was like the final piece to his world domination.
Right. And I mean, when you say like, just historically speaking, you know, obviously we've all read about genocidal leaders. When I hear 2 billion people. I mean, we just have to quantify here. According to our best records, you know, depending on who you ask, Mao Zedong, generally it's believed he killed about, under his regime, 59 million people perished. I've heard numbers as high as 80.
Wow. I know Stalin was over 40 million.
Stalin was around 45. And then Hitler was roughly 27. But it depends who you ask.
Also, King Leopold II... also murdered like probably millions and millions of Congolese. A lot of people know about that.
Yeah, and Genghis Khan, what? He ousted 11% of the world's population.
And then later on, as you know today, probably about one out of every 5 Asians, I believe, have his DNA. Some ridiculous number.
So I get it. He has to raise the bar a little here, you know, because there are... It's interesting, like the population has grown, but I don't feel like the world's population has grown massively. Like others would say, because I've grown up.
I don't mean to interrupt, but did you all watch Marco Polo on Netflix?
Negative. No, I haven't seen it. How is it?
Talks about Genghis Khan a lot, actually. It has to do with him. And it's the guy that played Dr. Strange's right-hand man. What's his name?
Wan?
The guy that played Wan.
I like Wan.
He's on that
plays
show?
Him. Yeah, He plays Genghis Khan.
Oh, nice.
It's a good show. Highly recommend it. But anyway, get back to it. Sorry.
it's an interesting thing. And I feel as you read more of the books, you know, because that's such an amplified number, just to give you historical context of the folks who died under communism or fascism, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
But just to see that he's amplified it up like that, I would be very curious in concurrent stories afterwards to see what other elements might be amplified in the story.
Right, because, you know, for what it's worth, you know, you would like to learn a little bit more about this Voight character. It's very, kind of like a simple origin. He's just always a bad, always an evil person. You want to know what triggered that evil. Was there some kind of childhood trauma that made him go down that direction, to go and first kill off his family and then take over his, you know, his family corporation? And then, of course, as you know, throughout the story, he went and studied at Berkeley and studied under Elon Musk's grandson.
Now, I can't quite put my finger on how I can compare or how I can describe the art, because there's obviously people can be influenced. People have also original ideas that just kind of pop up in their head. Can you put into words, because I don't really want to misrepresent right. What his art is.
To me, it kind of had like an anime vibe to it a little bit, in my opinion. Kind of like an anime vibe style, anime style, in my opinion.
Yeah. Very colorful.
Very colorful.
And it's like, because the characters themselves, especially the Lee character, and I'm sorry, his friend's escaping me at the moment. They were...
It's about Daniel?
Yes, Daniel, thank you. Very friendly. Like, they look very friendly, welcoming type people. Like, they don't really, they saw features, and obviously they almost look like not to sound incorrect, my opinion, but like they could belong in like a more children friendly, you know, kind of thing, because they look so peaceful and welcoming. And obviously once you get the VOD, I mean, he's just the sinister. Just reeks off of him.
Well, before that, you have a drone crash into his apartment. That's where that's where the story begins.
Right.
For Daniel. And then you're introduced to his three hybrid animals that are like his protectors. And I thought that was pretty cool. You know, the splicing of different animals. And then, you know, they literally...
What were the three animals? Friend.
The three animals? There was Ardo. There was Igor. And then there was Cap.
You know, he killed...
Well, what were they, though?
Let's see. Ardo was like a combination of a dog and a porcupine or something like that. It was just like an interesting...
Armadillo!
I'm sorry. Thank you. Armadillo. Thank you. Armadillo. Igor was like the gorilla mixed with... He had wings.
Kind of cool looking.
Like a falcon, maybe, or something? Or like a phoenix?
Very cool looking figure there.
Yeah, it was. Like, seriously, in real life, if I had that as my, you know, freaking bodyguards, I'll take that.
He was a sassy monkey.
But, you know, a lot of these animals, you know, a little spoiler here, I mean, he's not afraid to kill these things either.
That's true.
In his books, you know.
No, that's true. Absolutely not. There was a lot of death.
plenty. A lot of blood.
But, I mean, basically, so this, you know, Alan came up with this idea.
And Christian.
He met Christian, and the two of them then... brought the idea to fruition.
Yeah, spent many years.
So to speak. Created this trade of four issues, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then created issue 5 and 6.
Right, the origin issues.
Right. And then is now working on issue 7, if I recall.
Yes.
And
so it's a work in progress, for sure, but it's great.
And okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to take a moment to really bask in the sun a little bit here. It sounds like you heard it straight from Alan himself. He is a fan of George Lucas, and I don't want to speak for you guys, but I will speak for myself.
Go ahead.
I think George Lucas is absolutely hammered way too much. What he's contributed to the world of comics and art and stuff like that. I'm just glad that I had somebody on this phone that is a very big Lucas fan. That's just refreshing to hear.
Well, he grew up near there. He obviously, you know, he grew up not too far from Skywalker Ranch.
So, but he still doesn't. Clint Eastwood did Dirty Harry movies. Necessarily like Dirty Harry. I don't know. Didn't ask him. But I'm just saying. I'm like, I like when that happens. I really like to see it, because I speak very kindly on this podcast of George Lucas.
Oh, we all do,
you guys.
We all do.
Yeah.
Well, put it this way: George is getting a little bit of love lately, last few years, after what Disney has done to his franchise.
Yeah.
So
Last Jedi or whatever.
I think at this point George has been forgiven for the prequels.
Yep.
Because
absolutely,
I could not have imagined anything even being potentially worse.
Can I say it again? Like I said on a previous podcast, miss George yet, dork side? Miss him yet? Okay.
Yep.
I do.
Anyway, with that, I think we've kind of got the gist of the whole thing. We got Alan's interview and what he thought about everything. And how he came to the concepts and stuff.
And once again, we want to thank Alan Lang for calling in. Really appreciate
that. On vacation.
On vacation. Taking the time to give us a call.
Now, Alan has multiple children. I don't know if the children are with him on vacation, but if that is the case, I give him extra kudos for
right.
Himself
because
away.
It's not it's early not in the day, easy. You know? It's like 8:30 at night when we're doing this right now.
That's
so.
True.
Alan, we really appreciate it, and we appreciate your work. We appreciate you, you know, reaching out. So thank you so much. And thank you for all the listeners out there that are listening to The Real Short Box. We appreciate you, and we want to know that we want you all to know that we're a friend of the independent comic book world and comic books in general. Kevin. I got a Dave Stevens special, like, Vampirella comic book.
Was it signed?
It didn't even have the title on the book. It
was
like,
signed?
No. It's just the artwork itself of Vampirella. It's so beautifully done, guys. Check our Instagram page. We just recently posted a picture about it here not too long ago of Vampirella with that Dave Stevens art. It's beautiful. And when I bought that, I bought it for $25, which is a steal of a deal. And with that, thank you for so much for listening. Please reach out to us on Instagram,
YouTube,
Facebook, YouTube. We have our podcast up on all kinds of formats. Darren, what's one of our formats?
Well, Spreaker, which is kind of a fresh new one.
Yeah, Spreaker. We have it up on what else?
Are we on Spotify too?
We're on Spotify now. We are also on Google Play Music and iTunes as well, everybody.
There we go. No excuse. If you have an iPhone or an Android, there's no excuse not to listen to this righteous podcast.
And you know what? If you can't listen to it, maybe we'll see you
at the Righteous and Wonderful Beautiful Comic Shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.